Welcome to the second to last lecture in the series. In this lecture, we're going to talk about the nature of time within the context of Einstein's theory of relativity. More specifically, we're going to talk about the theory of general relativity and what it says about the possibility of time travel, and what this in turn reveals to us about the theory of relativity itself and about the universe as a whole. No matter who you are, there's a good chance that at some point you've thought about the possibility of traveling through time. Thanks to countless movies and books, time travel has become part of our collective imagination and our popular culture. Stories featuring time travel have been popular for more than 100 years. This includes H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, and continuing into countless movies such as Back to the Future, 12 Monkeys, and Looper. Along with Einstein himself, the main figure in this lecture is the great Austrian mathematician Kurt Gödel. In 1940, Gödel fled Nazi Germany and immigrated to the United States, much as Einstein himself had done 7 years earlier. And like Einstein, Gödel took a position at the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton, where he became one of Einstein's closest friends. The friendship between Einstein and Gödel often manifested itself in the form of long walks and conversations together. After years of such conversations, Gödel produced an important essay. This essay challenged not only the completeness of the theory of relativity, but also the reality of time itself. But before getting into that, let me tell you a little more about Kurt Gödel. Gödel's work in mathematics was focused in the area of formal logic. And although opinions can differ, many consider Gödel to be the greatest logician of all time. In any case, his work made a huge impact on the history of mathematics as well as philosophy. In the first decades of the 20th century, logic was emerging as an increasingly important branch of mathematics. Philosophically minded mathematicians such as Bertrand Russell and Gottlob Frege had made a great progress in showing that logic could potentially underpin all of the branches of mathematics. In effect, their goal was to show that all mathematics follows directly from logic itself. Or to put it another way, they wanted to show that all branches of mathematics, geometry, algebra, arithmetic, etc., were really all just different ways of thinking about the same thing. They wanted to show that everything boiled down to logic. This laid the groundwork for what was known as Hilbert's program, named after the great mathematician David Hilbert, who we already encountered back in Lecture 2. What Hilbert set out to accomplish with this program was intellectually staggering. He wanted to prove that all of mathematics could be derived directly from a finite number of axioms. And furthermore, he wanted to be able to demonstrate that such a mathematical system could be internally self-consistent and also entirely complete. By complete, Hilbert meant that the axioms of the system could in principle be used to prove any given statement in the system to be either true or false. In the mathematical system that Hilbert was trying to build, there would be no unanswerable questions. In a way, Gödel played the single most important role in the history of Hilbert's program. He did so not in helping Hilbert to build a self-consistent and complete system of mathematics, but instead by proving that this could not be done. In 1931, Gödel published a paper which presented proofs of what had become known as Gödel's incompleteness theorems. The contents of these two theorems are quite technical, but they basically boil down to the following statement. For any self-consistent system of mathematics that's complex enough to be interesting, there absolutely must exist statements that cannot be proven to be either true or false. In other words, all non-trivial mathematical systems are incomplete. By proving the incompleteness theorems, Gödel had shown that Hilbert's program was from the very beginning doomed to fail. Now we're going to fast forward to the 1940s. At this time, Gödel was living in Princeton and interacting frequently with his friend and colleague Albert Einstein. It was during this period of time that Gödel became preoccupied by and fascinated with the concept of time. Although Gödel was foremost a mathematician, in many ways he had the outlook of a philosopher. And the philosopher in him became convinced that there were deep logical inconsistencies in the way that we thought about time. For one thing, we intuitively classify events into those that have taken place in the past, those that are taking place in the present, and those that will take place in the future. But with the theory of relativity, Einstein had begun to blur the edges of these categories. Relativity gave us reason to pause and reconsider the simple way that we thought about time. To see what I mean by this, consider two events, event A and event B. And imagine that these two events take place at two different locations in space. And let's also imagine that I'm standing somewhere where I can watch both locations at the same time. As I do so, I observe event A and event B occurring simultaneously. My intuition tells me that these events take place at the same time, not only to me, but universally to all observers. But according to relativity, observers in other frames of reference won't necessarily share this perception. Instead, to some observers, event A will occur before event B does. And to yet other observers, event B will take place before event A. Contrary to our naive intuition, simultaneity is not an absolute according to relativity. We'll never know exactly what Gödel and Einstein talked about during their long and frequent walks through Princeton, but it's hard to imagine that the nature of time wasn't a recurring topic. I imagine that Gödel and Einstein explored many of the facets of time in great depth over the years of their friendship. These conversations culminated in an essay that Gödel wrote in 1949. With this essay, Gödel set out to overturn our conventional way of thinking about time. According to Gödel, time as we commonly understand it simply cannot exist. In his essay, Gödel presented a cosmological solution to the gravitational field equations of general relativity. You might recall that back in Lecture 5, we talked about some of the cosmological solutions to these equations. For example, Einstein found a solution that describes a static universe that's wrapped around on itself. This solution was known as Einstein's world, and among other problems, it turned out to be unstable. This was followed by Alexander Friedman's more general solution. With this solution, Friedman could describe universes that are either expanding or contracting with time. And it's Friedman's solution that modern cosmologists use to describe the universe that we actually live in. In some ways, Gödel's cosmological solution was similar to those found by Einstein and Friedman. Like these others, Gödel's solution included a homogeneous distribution of matter, as well as a cosmological constant. But in addition to these more common features, the matter in the universe described by Gödel's solution was also rotating about an axis. Basically, the entirety of Gödel's universe is spinning like a giant merry-go-round. And it turns out that this is a key feature of Gödel's universe. And it's this feature that makes time behave differently than it does in most other cosmological solutions. In particular, in Gödel's universe, it's possible for objects to move backward through time. In other words, it allows for time travel. But what exactly do I mean when I say time travel? In our universe, an object could potentially take many different paths through space and time. They can move in many different directions and at different speeds. And each of these paths will lead an object through a different series of events. But of all of these possible paths through space and time that one could potentially take through our universe, none of them will ever pass through the same event twice. No matter what route I follow through space and time in the future, it will never again take me to today's date. But in Gödel's universe, it is possible for someone to be present for some event and then to travel through space only to later encounter the same event again. And when I say the same event, it's important to recognize that I'm not talking about a reoccurrence or reenactment of the original event. The event is not merely taking place a second time. Instead, it is the original event. The observer in this example has followed a path through their universe that has taken them from the future into the past. A path through space and time of this kind is known as a closed, time-like curve. And Gödel's solution is full of them. In fact, it can be shown that closed, time-like curves pass through every single event within Gödel's universe. There is nowhere and no event that is safe from time travelers. In Gödel's rotating universe, time just does not behave in the way that we usually think about time. In fact, time in Gödel's universe is much more like an additional dimension of space than it is like the dimension of time as we understand it. Let me explain what I mean by this. I can ordinarily choose to move in either direction along any given dimension of space. I can walk either north or south, for example. But I can only move forward through time. But in Gödel's universe, time is more like a dimension of space, and you can move through it in either direction, either forward or backward through time. In this sense, Gödel's universe is something like a universe of space alone. It's a universe without time, or at least a universe without time as we generally know it. Up to this point in the story, I haven't talked much about Einstein or the role that he played in developing or influencing Gödel's ideas about time. Einstein and Gödel were certainly in close contact during this period of time. They were close friends, after all. And Gödel was working directly with the equations of Einstein's own theory. It would be hard to imagine that they didn't discuss these ideas at length. But that being said, I've never heard anyone suggest that Einstein was the major force behind these ideas. Gödel's work on time seems to have been largely his own. But Einstein did serve to elevate and promote Gödel's essay on time. He hailed it as an important contribution to the general theory of relativity, and especially to the concept of time. And if you had a new idea about the nature of time that you wanted people to take seriously, there's no better endorsement to have than Einstein's. But despite Einstein's public endorsement, he was actually quite skeptical of some of Gödel's work. More specifically, Einstein wasn't convinced that Gödel's cosmological solution had any real physical significance or implications for the nature of time. For one thing, it's clear that Gödel's solution to the field equations doesn't describe the universe that we actually live in. Gödel's universe isn't expanding, while ours definitely is. And there's no evidence that our universe is rotating in the way that Gödel's is. But these distinctions miss the point that Gödel was trying to make in his essay. To Gödel, it didn't really matter what kind of universe we actually live in. By showing that there exist any solutions to general relativity which contain closed time-like curves, Gödel thought that he had found a logical inconsistency with the theory itself. And he thought that this logical inconsistency should force us to revisit, and perhaps radically revise, our very conception of time. In some ways, Einstein and Gödel saw eye to eye about the questions raised by Gödel's essay. In particular, they both recognized and agreed that the existence of closed time-like curves would make it impossible for one to distinguish the past from the future. And they also both agreed that the lack of a well-defined direction of causality in such a system could lead to paradoxes, and oftentimes to illogical nonsense. Just to be clear, I'm not trying to say that all kinds of time travel are problematic. In some cases, they're not. Some kinds of time travel are entirely logically self-consistent. Think back to Lecture 1 when we introduced the theory of special relativity. In that lecture, we went through an example involving a pair of twins. In that example, one twin travels through space at nearly the speed of light and then returns to Earth. To the moving twin, only a few years of time have passed during their trip. But on Earth, and to the stationary twin, a full century of time in history had played out. By moving at nearly the speed of light, the moving twin traveled not only through space, but also through time and into the future. And there are no logical problems with this. In principle, if you can move fast enough, you can move arbitrarily far into the future, 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, 1,000,000,000 years, or more. But moving backward through time is another thing altogether. And it's with backward time travel that serious logical problems start to appear. The most famous illustration of these kinds of problems is known as the grandfather paradox. Let me describe it to you. Imagine that I follow a closed time-like curve to a point in the past. At this point, I encounter and then kill my own grandfather while he's still a child. As a consequence of these actions, my grandfather never grows up. He never meets my grandmother, and he never has any children or grandchildren. This means I'm never born. And therefore, I never exist, and that means I never travel backwards through time to kill my grandfather. So since he was never killed, my grandfather survives to meet my grandmother, and they do have children and grandchildren together. So once again, I do exist. And then, of course, I do travel through time to kill my grandfather, and you can see the problem. Backwards time travel makes it impossible for there to be a self-consistent timeline. The grandfather paradox has been a staple of science fiction since the 1930s. But in addition to producing some very entertaining storytelling, it also serves to illustrate the logical hazards that can come with unrestricted time travel. Any system in which it's possible to change the past suffers from these kinds of problems. And that means that any system containing closed time-like curves seems sure to lead to paradoxical nonsense. You should also keep in mind that this conclusion doesn't only apply to people or other living things that might travel through time. An electron, for example, might travel through a closed time-like curve only to prevent it from ever coming into existence. On fairly general grounds, the existence of closed time-like curves seems to break the very logical self-consistency of the universe. For these and other reasons, Einstein doubted that Gödel's result could have any real physical meaning or other physical implications. He didn't doubt that Gödel's math was correct, and it was. But Einstein didn't think that all mathematically valid solutions to the equations of general relativity were necessarily physically valid solutions. Think back for a minute over the other lectures that you've already listened to in this series. From those lectures, you should be able to recall a number of cases where Einstein applied his intuition in order to decide whether or not a given solution to his field equations was physically meaningful. As you go through these examples, you'll find that Einstein doesn't have a particularly great track record. Take black holes, for example. Black holes are described by a valid solution to the field equations, first identified in 1915. But Einstein refused to believe that objects like these could ever form. Only well after Einstein died did astronomers begin to discover real black holes in our universe. We now know that very massive stars inevitably become black holes, and supermassive black holes occupy the centers of most galaxies. But throughout his entire life, Einstein refused to believe that such objects were in fact physically possible. And for another example, consider the expansion of the universe. Until Edwin Hubble proved him wrong, Einstein rejected the possibility that the universe might be expanding or contracting. Instead, his intuition led him to insist that the universe must be static. So when we take these examples into account, we see that Einstein had a far from perfect record when it came to deciding which solutions to his field equations were physically real and which were not. And this leads us to the question at hand. Was Einstein correct to reject the physical significance of Gödel's universe? And what, if anything, does Gödel's work tell us about general relativity or about the nature of time itself? At the time, it was probably impossible to know whether Einstein was right to disregard any physical significance of Gödel's cosmological solution. Throughout his life, Einstein often played the role of the skeptic, and this was no exception. Gödel's essay in Time had identified what seemed to be a very surprising aspect of general relativity. But when faced with these surprising consequences, Einstein's instincts told him that this result probably didn't really matter. And Einstein did have some good reasons to support this choice. As I said before, the universe that we live in is clearly very different from the one described by Gödel's solution. So someone with Einstein's outlook could simultaneously acknowledge that Gödel's universe seems to have some logical inconsistencies, but at the same time, he could argue that our universe, the real universe, doesn't necessarily suffer from any of these problems. Maybe our universe doesn't contain any closed time-like curves. And if there are no closed time-like curves in our universe, then maybe there are not actually any underlying problems with time, at least not with the way that time seems to exist in our world. Supported by reasoning along these lines, Einstein decided that he could sweep Gödel's objections under the proverbial rug. But in my opinion, this is where Einstein went wrong, or at least where he seems to have reached these conclusions a bit prematurely. When Gödel pointed out that closed time-like curves could exist even in a hypothetical universe, this gave us a deep and good reason to worry about the self-consistency of general relativity itself. Even though we don't actually live in a universe like the one described by Gödel's solution, it's not clear that our universe is entirely safe from the kinds of logical inconsistencies that could be associated with the existence of closed time-like curves. Some of these potential problems regarding time were explored further in later years, and especially in the 1960s, when interest in general relativity was growing among scientists. For example, solutions to the field equations were found during this period of time that describe not only stationary black holes, but also black holes that are rotating or spinning. To the surprise of many, these solutions appear to show that the space and time immediately surrounding a rotating black hole can also contain closed time-like curves. Like in Gödel's universe, the existence of rotating black holes seems, at least at first glance, to be logically problematic for general relativity and for time itself. Over the past several decades, a number of other solutions containing closed time-like curves have been found. Among the most famous are those that feature what are known as wormholes. A wormhole is something like a portal that connects two points in space to each other. By traveling through a wormhole, one could, in principle, travel directly from one place to another. It might not seem obvious, but it turns out that in order for something like a wormhole to be able to instantly transport something across space, it must also be able to function as a time machine. In fact, anything that is capable of moving from one place to another at a speed faster than the speed of light must also allow one to travel backward in time. So the existence of wormholes or of anything else that enables one to travel faster than light also implies the existence of closed time-like curves. In recent decades, different physicists have expressed a wide range of views about the issues involved with closed time-like curves and time travel. Some work has been done during this time which seems to show that some of the logical paradoxes associated with time travel can be avoided or circumvented. And other work has shown that some of the most problematic kinds of closed time-like curves seem unlikely to really exist. That being said, there's still no clear or complete resolution to these issues. More than half a century ago, Einstein decided that Gödel's objections about time could be swept under the rug, declaring them to be physically irrelevant. But even today, these questions seem to linger. In 1992, Stephen Hawking wrote a famous paper in which he took a different kind of approach to this issue. In Hawking's paper, he didn't try to argue how or why closed time-like curves don't exist. Instead, Hawking simply declared that there must be something about our universe, something we don't know about yet, that makes closed time-like curves impossible. Hawking called this his chronology protection conjecture. What Hawking had in mind when he formulated his conjecture were the effects of what are known as quantum gravity. So far in this lecture, everything we've talked about has been a direct consequence of the general theory of relativity, and we basically ignored any role that quantum mechanics might have to play. But the fact is, we don't understand how quantum mechanics and general relativity work together or influence each other. Maybe it comes down to string theory or something along those lines, or maybe quantum gravity will be described by something else entirely. At this point in time, I think it's personally wise to remain open-minded about how quantum mechanics and general relativity will ultimately be found to connect and unify with one another. For most of the phenomena that we can test in our laboratories or explore with our telescopes, the quantum effects of gravity aren't very important or even observable. This is one of the main reasons why it's been so hard for us to learn more about quantum gravity and how it might work. With his chronology protection conjecture, Hawking was basically suggesting that perhaps there's something about quantum gravity, something we don't know about yet, that makes it impossible for closed time-like curves to exist. In his paper, Hawking didn't claim to offer a well-defined solution to this problem. Instead, he essentially hypothesized that whatever the solution is, it will likely become apparent once we begin to understand the quantum nature of gravity. Whether or not he's right, who knows? But it wouldn't surprise me if he is. In the last few minutes of this lecture, I'd like us to take a step back and think about Einstein and the successes and failures that he has had over the course of his life and career. This series of lectures is about what Einstein got wrong, so for this reason, we haven't emphasized his successes very much. But that being said, Einstein's list of successes is clearly much more substantial than his list of failures. If Einstein's career had ended after discovering special relativity in 1905, he would still be among the most important physicists of the 20th century. But he didn't stop there. In the same year of special relativity, he was also the first to identify the particle nature of light and to provide the first clear empirical proof that atoms actually exist. And then, in the years that followed, he went on to develop general relativity, one of the most important accomplishments in the history of science. As I said in the opening of Lecture 1, I don't want these lectures on Einstein's mistakes to in any way be taken as a criticism or a condemnation of Einstein's scientific legacy. Einstein is an absolute giant of a scientist, and he deserves all of the credit that he's normally given. That being said, even the great Einstein made some mistakes from time to time. Some of these mistakes were really just points of confusion that Einstein ultimately ended up correcting, either on his own or with input from others. For example, he once mistakenly concluded that gravitational waves could not exist, but he later changed his mind once he understood the problem more clearly. He also initially formulated the field equations of general relativity incorrectly, only arriving at the final and correct version some years later. Other mistakes that Einstein made were corrected when new evidence came to light. Einstein's rejection of expanding space is a good example of this. Although Einstein could be stubborn, he was first and foremost a scientist. And when the data say that something is true, a scientist has little choice but to accept it as true. You can argue with other scientists, but you can't argue with the data. I suspect that if Einstein had lived long enough to see the discovery of black holes, he would have accepted the reality of their existence as well, even though he rejected them during his lifetime. When it comes to the issue of time, the subject of this lecture, it's not entirely clear just how wrong Einstein really was. In this lecture, I've taken the position that Einstein was only wrong in that he was so quick to dismiss the physical implications of Gödel's result. It may turn out that one day we'll understand why closed time-like curves don't exist. And that could seem to vindicate Einstein in the position that he took on this issue. But no one knows yet how this question will play out. And the fact is, Einstein didn't really understand or offer any solution to the problem. He just stubbornly declared that it was not physically meaningful. In the next lecture, the final lecture of the series, I'm going to try to put Einstein and his mistakes into a larger historical and scientific context. Toward this end, I'm going to talk about some of the mistakes that were made by a few of the greatest physicists of all time: Galileo Galilei, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton.